he wears a pocket protector as a fashion accessory. But he is a nerd. Bringing you the latest in computers and gadgetry, here's Benjamin Rockwell with Computer Talk Radio.
There's a ton in store for you this week here on Computer Talk Radio. In a minute, I'm actually going to answer a question from Eddie about my negativity in regards to artificial intelligence, and I'll dive down a number of different roads with that. We've got a number of other listener questions to start off the year. Mandy, she wants to know about my experience with RSU stocks. Christine, her husband wants to go with a smart home, but wants to know if it's actually going to save electricity. Greg, is it worth replacing a broken tablet or a laptop screen? Ryan, he laments the fact that we have to keep buying new PCs. Marty's going to talk to me about CES. That's right around the corner. Keith Emcedor, he's going to give a wish list of how Apple needs to change their approach in 2025. Steve Keske, he and I are going to talk about our first experiences with online video games. I'm also going to cover how much internet speed you need and the scam series, a fake merchant trap. All of that is going to be on this week's Computer Talk Radio. If you miss any of that, go to the website, computertalkradio.com. That's computertalkradio.com. Check out the podcast there. If you have any questions for me, you can reach me there, or you can also phone me at 888-NERD 888. That's 888-637-3888. So Eddie had a question for me. You have been negative about artificial intelligence, but I'd like to understand more about the drawbacks than you've given thus far. Okay, so artificial intelligence, AI. We've been hearing about it for a little over 2 years now, and it's the stuff of sci-fi movies and tech utopias, but also the subject of a lot of really intense debates. And yes, I will admit, I am very skeptical about a lot of what they are branding as AI. And it's, to me, how do I explain this? It's like that too-good-to-be-true infomercial product. Sounds amazing, but you can't just shake that feeling that there's a catch there. The reality is, there's all kinds of different catches that are coming along the way. See, AI isn't all of that rainbows and robots taking over mundane chores. It is really, it is one part Marvel and one part just, we're going to name everything AI, which is really diluting the whole idea of AI. And we're going to struggle with this for a while. Let's go through a few different sections of this. The bias issue is very big there with AI. See, AI isn't just neutral. It isn't sitting there and just thinking for itself. It is taught. And that teaching is going to come with human bias. It is going to come with all of the different information that comes from the programmers. It's how they put the information in. And they aren't so much programmers as they're feeding the information through. And we can imagine like a dog that's trained only with the command sit, but in one language. Now, when you try that in a different language, the dog just sits there going, huh? What? So if AI is trained on biased data, it reflects. And more than that, it amplifies some of those biases as it tries to expand along the way. Facial recognition software is an example of this. It's been criticized for being far less accurate with people of color, and that has led to misidentifications, some wrongful arrests, and that's not exactly what we signed up for when we said, oh yeah, AI is cool, put it here. So then we move into privacy, and that's just right on the heels of all of those misidentifications. So AI, it thrives on data, and lots of it, and it takes that data in. Now, you may be thinking, okay, everybody takes that in. I want you to think about what I'm saying here. Your online habits, your preferences, your personal conversations are all fair game to this. It's like having, you know, that roommate who snoops through your stuff to understand you better, but it's attached to everything. And what we see out of Facebook and all of these different groups, Google and whatnot, they are applying algorithms. And AI is just a fancy name for an algorithm. And it's processing all of this information. So think about that time that your phone showed you an ad for something that you just casually mentioned to a friend. That's that algorithm, but it's really AI eavesdropping, quote unquote, to improve your experience. But that's AI. That really is. It's just advanced algorithms listening in and processing what you're saying. And then we get into a lot of the concerns, and we do have to deal with this idea whether there's a fact or fear in regards to a job apocalypse coming at us. And we've been seeing so much of this, and I've said, look, we don't need to really worry as much about this, because with it, for every job it's going to create, it's going to replace others. It's a double-edged sword. It can write a killer resume, what it thinks is a killer resume, but it also might make yours obsolete because other information is being added to other people's resumes. And if you're doing a manual resume, so it's really moving us to a position where we have to go to professional resume writers. So we're seeing a lot of different industries, manufacturing, customer service, creative fields, where AI is coming in and it's taking over some of the tasks that people once did, but it's not doing it all as well as what we would have hoped. But what happens there? The people have already been kicked out. Oh, we can develop images now just by putting in a little bit of text into an AI engine. It creates this beautiful picture. Well, that picture has some inaccuracies. And as you start to dig deeper, it's artificial intelligence. You look at it and it's like, it's a fake picture. And Photoshop artists, this is just one example. Photoshop artists, they look to create realism. Whenever they're putting together these images, they're looking for it to be really good enough to fool everybody without you looking at it for a 3-second period and going, yeah, that's fake. That's AI. We then get into issues like ethical quagmires. See, AI does not have a conscience. That means it doesn't have any dilemmas, any moral dilemmas. It just doesn't understand that. So we can put this through a number of different tests. I'll use the idea of Tesla and the cars. They're not really utilizing AI per se, but if you've got an autonomous car and it faces an unavoidable accident, how does it decide who it's going to protect? This isn't a hypothetical. This is something that the developers have been wrestling with. That self-driving car might prioritize the passenger's life over a pedestrian's. It might prioritize the driver over the passenger. But who gets to make that call? And we've been going through these kinds of issues. It's called the trolley problem. If we really break it down, they've been debating that for centuries. Now, AI's taken over, and 2 years later, it's doing all kinds of stuff like this. And that's not good. And then we get into dependence and laziness. I mean, AI can make our lives easier, but maybe too easy. What happens when machines handle everything from decision-making to remembering birthdays? Our brain is going to start to atrophy. We're not going to really remember as much as we did before. It's like relying on autocorrect so much that you forget how to spell the basic words in your vocabulary. I want you to think about GPS. We use GPS so much that a lot of people are struggling to find their way to familiar spots without using GPS. Now, imagine that. Let's expand that on out with AI doing most of the thinking for us. What's going to happen to our brains? What's going to happen to us as a society if we start letting the computers choose everything? That's pretty rough. At the bottom line, AI is not really all it's cracked up to be. I mean, it's not a villain twirling its digital mustache, but it is a tool, and like any tool, it comes with risks and responsibilities. And the key here is we have to know when and how to wield this tool. My best thing for Eddie and for everybody else is stay informed, ask questions, don't be afraid to challenge the AI hype. It can be a game changer, but whether that game ends in victory or defeat depends on how we play that game. Coming up next, Ryan laments the fact that we have to keep buying new PCs. That'll be next here on Computer Talk Radio.
Let's talk about on and off.
You mean like light switches?
Yeah, the original user interface device.
And you were there, right?
Hey, I'm not that old.
Yeah, you are. So on and off.
Yeah, only with no humans doing it, like...
But you and I both have our computers on CyberPower UPS systems.
Yeah, so we have power, but there's another on and off.
Oh, right. Online and offline.
You got it. Meaning another UPS at the cable modem and VoIP phone and Wi-Fi router.
And even a low-cost standby UPS can handle those. Better, of course, if it has AVR.
Right, so it doesn't have to hit the battery just because the line voltage drops.
Maybe it's a good time to mention the promo that saves $10 to $15. Details are at the CyberPower website.
And maybe you could put it on your website?
Oh, that's already done at ComputerTalkRadio.com.
You know, on and off. You take really good care of your listeners.
Ryan reached out to me, and you can do it too. Go to ComputerTalkRadio.com, ComputerTalkRadio.com. Scroll down to where it says contact us today, and I will get back with you in regards to your computer questions, your technology concerns. And Ryan's whole item, he was lamenting the fact, I'm going to break it down, time marches forward. That's my own wording, but it was basically some struggles he was having with the idea that he received a notice on a laptop that's about 5 years old. And what has happened? Well, he's being encouraged to abandon that five-year-old laptop so that he can run Windows 11. And this is a struggle we've had over the years. This is a problem that has existed throughout all of the operating systems. And sometimes it moves far faster than we would like. I know that I'm currently lamenting the fact that my two-year-old smartphone, an iPhone, is all but technically obsolete. It's 2 years old. As a matter of fact, it's really 2 years old as I record this. I got it just a couple of months after it had been released. So I'm looking right now as far as do I want to abandon the iOS infrastructure? Because they've already basically said that all of the updates that are moving forward, iOS 18, mind you, I got this at iOS 16. All of these iOS 18 updates that are coming out, with rare exception, are all about Apple intelligence. They're all about the latest and greatest AI things that they're going to build in. Although some of those that they've promised have yet to be even delivered. So do I even bother upgrading right now to a system that doesn't even have all of the features and technology that they say that I should have? Well, because they are the arbitrators of what I should and should not have. So I am personally struggling as well. But I do need to look back at my history with computing. And 5 years old for any system these days is getting along in the tooth. My current system that I have right now as my primary system is right about 4 years old, and I'm ready to upgrade. I'm resisting because I'm not fond of Windows 11. I'm not fond of a lot of the things that are going on with Windows 11, and I am tempted to upgrade the system that I have here, finally, to Windows 11. I went a couple of times, and I planned out, okay, I'm going to upgrade it in the coming week or two, and then Microsoft had their little problems, and I've talked about that before. But I also look back at my history of computing, and I look back at the time period between 1991 and 2001. A lot changed over the course of that 10-year period. During that 10-year period, I was running DOS, and that was the system that I had, and it could handle DOS very well. And Windows 3.0 had been out for a little while in 91, but it was not impressive. It did not allure me into moving in that direction. However, Windows 3.1, that was exciting. Windows 3.1 came out, and I'm going, you know what? I'm kind of liking this. There's a lot more that's coming along with this. There's a lot of things like plug and play and upgrades to the system that were far more than a 0.1 upgrade. So I did get a system, a brand new system at that point in time. And it wasn't but just a few years later when Windows 95 came out, and that was exciting. And I believe from memory, I believe I was able to just upgrade that system without upgrading the hardware. But it wasn't too long before I went to upgrade the hardware when we went to Windows 98. And then, yes, around the corner from Windows 98, just a couple of years later, was Windows ME, Millennium Edition. And yes, following right on the heels of Millennium Edition, which was really a bad version by a lot of different standards, it wasn't as bad as we all said it was going to be, that we thought it would be, but it was still a little off, a little odd. So I was more than happy to run Windows XP when we got to 2001. So that's kind of that history over the course of 10 years, and I probably upgraded my systems, about every 3 years or so. And I grew used to doing that. As a matter of fact, the system that I have right now is my primary system, as I've mentioned. That is actually probably one of the oldest systems, the longest I've gone without upgrading systems. Now, mind you, I did get a system that was fairly robust, fairly solid when I bought this most recent system. And I can go to Windows 11 with that. But is that really all that it's cracked up to be? I don't know. I'm hoping that Windows 12 will be announced and we will move away from Windows 11 and we'll finally be into a better operating system that is a little bit more in the terms of my liking. I'm hoping for that. I'm not exactly excited by that. But that's over on the Windows side. Over on the Mac side, it used to be, we go to Catalina, which was iOS 10.5, if I recall correctly, and that was a good system. And when it came out, it ran on hardware that was roughly about 10 years old. In the interim, in the course of the next few operating systems, we started to move forward, and we started to go into things like Ventura. That was the first of the 10.13, or Ventura was Mac OS 13. And by the time we got to 2022, when it came out in October 2022, they had already decided that the hardware that it was going to run on was not going to be anywhere near as old as before. The oldest of the systems were from 2017, 5 years earlier. Even today, when we look at Sequoia, that is Mac OS 15, yes, there are a couple of systems. The iMac Pro will run that, but that iMac Pro was also from 2017. Everything else, a couple of them from 2018 and later into, then we get into 2019 and even some that are 2020 and later. That's for an operating system that was initially released just a few months ago. We're talking some of the hardware. If you purchased a MacBook Air, for instance, in 2020, it will run the operating system that came out this year in 2024. So we see this shift. We see this shift towards a shorter lifetime for the hardware. But that was also very similar during the 10 years that I detailed out, going back from DOS on all the way on up to Windows XP. But we got a lot in there. I do lament the fact that currently we're not getting as much in the way of upgrades in regards to improvements, in regards to any of the excitement in the operating system that we used to. And we have moved as a people towards truly accepting this routine of upgrading about every 3, 4, 5 years. And yes, that means we need to start budgeting. We need to start planning for, yes, obsolescence of everything we're running. Do I agree that the smartphone should be upgraded no less than 2 years later, or any less than 2 years later? No, I don't think so. But yeah, I'm still deciding on that. As for now, this is Benjamin Rockwell. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment.
Micro Center, home to all kinds of electronics and computer items, has over 20 locations across the country, and it's also available at microcenter.com. This is Benjamin Rockwell of Computer Talk Radio, and I live just a couple of miles away from my local Micro Center, and I've been shopping there for years. From Apple to Windows, they've got what you need. CPUs, got them. Screwdrivers and other tools, yep. Cables, televisions, scanners, projectors, cameras, they have it all. Micro Center is a place which fills your electronic needs. What are you looking for? Media centers, monitors, mice, MP3 players, media, modems, motherboards, memory? Those are just the M's. They aren't regional, but spread across our great land from Virginia to California. Each one is service and repair, in-store clinics, and business services, too. MicroCenter.com is their online store, a place where you can get your regular online ordering needs met. From the hobbyist to the professional, the brand name, or building it yourself, MicroCenter is your resource. Check out MicroCenter.com today. MicroCenter.com.
Website, ComputerTalkRadio.com, ComputerTalkRadio.com. That's how you can reach out to us. Scroll down to where it says contact us today. We will answer your computer questions and your technology concerns. Keith M. Cedar joins me now. And Keith, we're into a brand new year. And you and I have been talking a little bit here and there about some of the struggles. To me, it feels like Apple's, I think I used the term rudderless recently about them. What are your hopes for Apple for the coming year? For not so much, I don't want to hear about, we don't get into a lot of the prognostication about, oh, they're going to come out with this new iPhone or that kind of hardware, whatever. Just overall, what do you hope that they do?
I would really like, and it's funny you bring this up because I've been thinking about this for a while. I would really love if Apple would stop being so one note. Mm-hmm. It's like Apple seems to think that they need to pick a single direction mm-hmm. and just do that one thing. And what do I mean? Well, when Apple came out with the iPod, that was an answer to many questions. People had MP3s on their computer in iTunes, and they wanted to have a portable player to play them on because mm-hmm. all the third-party players out there weren't up to snuff. So they came out with the iPod, and the iPod was great for many years, went through many permutations and incarnations. But a few years later, as the iPod came out in 2001, and then in 2007, Apple introduced the iPhone. And when they introduced the iPhone, they introduced it as a cellular phone, an internet communicator, and a widescreen touchscreen iPod. And they cannibalized their own sales. And, you know, like any good company, it says, well, we'd rather cannibalize from ourselves than let somebody else, you know, take that market share from us.
Sure.
But here we are, iPod and iPhone, almost 20 to 25 years later. And Apple's really missed the mark on something. They were so crazed about making sure they didn't miss out on the streaming phenomenon, your Spotify, your iHeartRadio, your Pandora.
Yeah.
And they came out with Apple Music, that they denigrated iTunes in the process.
Mm-hmm.
And they were so bent on selling everybody a $10 a month streaming subscription that the curation of one's own music library that a lot of us have been doing for 20 years or more fell by the wayside and literally became the redheaded stepchild of Apple's computing platform, to the point where it's almost a niche retro thing now. There are lots of people who do it. There's people who fix up old iPods, add Bluetooth to them, change the FireWire cable to USB-C, all kinds of crazy things, you know, swap out the hard drives for SSDs, put in better quality batteries, change out the plastic so you can make a custom iPod, you know, with the scroll wheel.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's really, really neat. What I would like Apple to do in 2025 and going forward is take a two-pronged approach to music. Sure, if you really want to sell people who just want to have whatever they want to have, you know, at their fingertips, a $10 a month streaming service because they want to listen to the quote-unquote internet radio, fine, do that. But stop neglecting your core base, your Gen Xers, maybe even some of your boomers who have been curating music libraries since we were able to rip LPs and CDs into MP3s. Because the reality of it is that I like another streaming service. I use Live One, which used to be called Slacker, because of some of the programming they have on it. And the reality of it is Apple is not going to, regardless of how many pop-ups they have, sell me a subscription to Apple Music with the incentive of, well, here's a free month, here's three free months, or anything like that.
Sure.
If Apple wants my money, they need to go back down the avenue of saying, you know what, we're going to remind everybody we sell songs for a buck a pop, a buck and a quarter a pop, or albums for $10 a pop. And maybe let's make a new iPod. I would buy both. I don't want my phone to be my iPod. I don't. My phone is my GPS. My phone is my notes. My phone is my messages. My phone is a myriad of things. When I'm driving in the car, I would love to have a dedicated music player. And I would buy that from Apple again if they made a new one that could Bluetooth connect to my car, Bluetooth connect to CarPlay. Heck, plug in via a cable with CarPlay. Sell me an iPod, and I'll buy that in addition to the phone I buy from you regularly. That's what I want from Apple.
And I bet that goes in all directions. I bet that you've got a lot of different areas. As we've been talking about, both on air and off air, I am very unimpressed with the one trick that they did for the latest version of iOS, which is Apple Intelligence.
Yeah, and let's not forget iTunes, which was introduced for the Mac user and then later brought to Windows.
Yeah, yeah.
iTunes is now only available in Windows. The last remaining copies currently that you can download from Apple is on a Windows machine only. You can no longer download iTunes for a Mac.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah, it's annoying is what it is.
Were there any other directions you'd like to see Apple improve on?
Like we've discussed previously, Benjamin, neither you nor I, the consummate Mac guy, is really impressed by Apple Intelligence.
Right.
I would like to see Siri as smart as what's on my Amazon Echo. I mean, that's the smart assistant I have running through my house.
Yeah.
If it's currently occupied because somebody's listening to music or some other type of programming or otherwise engaged with the device, I will pull out my iPhone and talk to Siri, ask it a question as a secondary option, but only if one of my Echoes in the house is occupied.
Yeah. And I think it, one of the other recurring things that you really have been hoping for is a move back to the larger IMAX. I know that's still a big thing for you.
That's nebulous and out there, kind of like Apple making an actual television. You know, we got the Apple TV box.
Oh, you've given up on the 27-inch iMac. Okay.
No, I actually haven't, because rumor has it, Apple said they won't make a 27-inch iMac again. And we think that was their way of letting us know we're not making a 27-inch one, but all evidence says there might be something slightly larger.
43-inch. As for now, this is Benjamin Rockwell.
And I'm Keith M. Cedor.
You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment.
Hi, this is Benjamin Rockwell. Most of us use digital cameras nowadays, but what do we do with those old pictures and slides in the back of the closet? Well, let me tell you about Legacy Digital Productions. They specialize in taking your old memories on film, videotape, and slides and digitizing them to DVDs. If you have boxes of old slides, then you know they fade more and more each year. Let Legacy Digital scan them for you and stop the aging process dead in its tracks. You'll get beautiful 10-megapixel digital files, color-corrected and ready for printing. All this is done faster and cheaper than buying a film scanner and doing it yourself. Your files are then burned onto gold archival DVD discs, where they will last for generations. Call right now, mention my name, Benjamin Rockwell, and receive a 30% discount on your order. Call toll-free 1-866-2-LEGACY. That's 1-866-2-LEGACY. And tell them Benjamin sent you. Your memories are priceless, so call 866-2-LEGACY now.
The website, ComputerTalkRadio.com, ComputerTalkRadio.com. That's how you can reach out to us. Scroll down to where it says contact us today, and we will get back to you, answering your computer questions and your technology concerns. Marty Winston joins me now, and I'll look back here over the course of the years. It was about 16 years ago that I was prepping to go to CES for the first time. And since you've joined me, we met like the second year I was there, maybe, I think.
Wow.
Maybe even the first year. And you've joined me here on the air, and we've talked about CES every year.
Abbreviation, you know, it means come everybody shove.
Yes. Shove and shank and shatter and all kinds of various violent terms.
And sob.
Yes. Yeah. So much. No sleep. Sleep is not the S there.
And then let's not forget, and this is a real thing, everybody, trade show amnesia.
Yeah, I've pretty much forgotten a lot of the things I said. Yes.
Now, you go home from a trade show, you won't remember anything you said, anything anybody told you, or anything that you saw. And if you do remember it, you won't remember who made it.
Yes. I've struggled. I've made a lot of notes over the years, and it's always been a very intense experience. But now I haven't gone since COVID started. And 2019.
Well, let me catch
my last year.
What's going to be at this one?
Yes, do tell.
Let's start automotive. It's huge, and let me explain why all these categories are huge.
Yeah,
the consumer electronics industry at the original core of CES is not big and healthy enough to support a show as big as CES. So they melted into larger landscapes. There's appliances.
Well, I think a lot of people actually try to get in because it's such a big show. It's the largest trade show in the United States, and they wanted to find a way in. So everybody said, "Well, we're high tech because we've got CarPlay in our car, or because we use computer chips, or because we use AI." Well, okay. A lot of those are a stretch these days, but I'm sorry, I interrupted you. Go for it.
I wanted to start with automotive, and if there are publicity stunts, a lot of them have to do with windshields and dashboards, the cockpit,
okay,
where the driver sits. And there's some amazing things coming, and the industry version of publicity stunts is really amazing.
Yes.
It's almost to the point where the dashboard is nearly wider than the car itself.
Mm-hmm.
They're wrapping around the entire front of the car. And I don't know why the passenger has to see somebody or something on the far right, but the numbers and the images all go around.
I've seen some of those, yeah.
And let me say, it's unlikely you're going to buy that car. I think they make them as a stunt for a few hundred cars that go nowhere. So
they show
they can do it. And then you go into the showroom and you get the same old, same old. It's okay, though. It's show and tell. Sensors and the automotive industry has done a lot to advance sensors and also to make the sensors smaller, cheaper.
Sure.
Millimeter wave, which is kind of like radar, only tighter, is replacing a lot of what ultrasonics had done. So rear bumper don't hit the thing warnings are now using almost radar. There is a lot of lithium iron phosphate coming to CES.
Okay.
Battery boxes will last a long time and have enough juice to at least partially replace the power lines. Some are whole house units. They don't last forever, but they're big. A lot of stupid, dangerous artificial intelligence. A bonanza of boneheaded rush for riches products that ignore consequences because they're only built by programmers.
Mm-hmm.
Bio signs, more ways to monitor, but really no true expertise. You want to see your heartbeat? Here it is. What does that mean to you? Are you trained in that? You know?
Yeah, yeah.
Drones, and good luck figuring out this category. The brands are all shuffling through small peninsulas of superiority that they can claim. We're the best in gray and purple, you know, whatever. I hate to be shopping for one, but it's absolutely a more mature category now. The questions of whether they can fly or for how long and how far and please how quietly, you know, are getting addressed. Home appliances, robot vacuums and mops, robot lawnmowers, robot pool cleaners, combinations of both cook and refrigerate. Spin the wheel and pick three ways you want a countertop to cook or bake or air fry, and those home appliances are there.
Yeah.
Crypto, not much. Not much there for crypto.
Okay.
Stereo and home theater. Yeah, still there, but not as interesting. Mobile accessories, too many to count. Earbuds, chargers, gaming, that stuff. Handheld through pinball machines and gaming. Wearables, claims for neural interfaces. And a lot of things intended to be worn like rings, but some less the size of rings and more the size of jewelry boxes that the rings come in. And the food at CES, not much better than before, unless you go to the far left, through the exhibit hall, and into the Fountain Blue where the food court's magic.
Okay, so a quick question, because we've got 30 seconds left. Are you going?
Nope. I'm going to cover it remotely.
Okay. Yeah, same here.
Because my son's getting married on New Year's Eve.
All right. Well, hey, congratulations on that one. So, yeah, I'm not going either. I've become burned out on the trade shows. There's just...
Oh, my.
It's too much energy, too much information, and not enough value, really, on the other end.
So it's return on investment not happening, right?
There you go. As for now, this is Benjamin Rockwell. That's Marty Winston. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment. Years ago, I found a web hosting company that fit my needs as a computer nerd, as a radio show host, and just a normal person. Recently, though, it was clear to me that it was time to upgrade, but I had a choice between my old plan and the new one at 7 times the cost. It was that awkward point where I could choose between a sip of water or being dunked in a pool. I searched around, comparing the many options for someone like me. After searching around for 3 weeks, there it was, SiteGround. In proper fashion, I tested their customer service, their knowledge, and their willingness to do things the right way. The SiteGround salesman made sure that I didn't overbuy and get a 50-gallon bucket when a 32-ounce soda would do. These guys know WordPress, Joomla, and regular standard websites. These guys at SiteGround are awesome. SiteGround.com. SiteGround.com. The bad guys are out to get us. They're out to get you, me, everybody they can. And the latest, we're calling this the fake merchant trap. And the way this works, instead of just charging your card number with a random purchase, the scammers are now creating fake merchants. Okay, there's a twist to this. The merchant name isn't going to be some misspelling of Amazon or Best Buy or Joe's Electronics or whatever. It's a phone number or an email address or a website. This is kind of the scam equivalent of leaving breadcrumbs along the way for you to follow. You'll see charge from whatever phone number it is, and it's designed to grab you and make you think, oh, what is this? I didn't buy anything from there. So naturally, what do? You call the number, you visit the website, and you want to dispute the charge. And that's what they're counting on. The customer service rep, the scammer, is going to ask you for various verification details. They'll ask for your credit card number, your billing address, or maybe other details that you shouldn't be giving out, like your social security number. And, oh, yeah, it's going to be associated with, we just need to confirm some details to process your refund. It all sounds harmless. And they are experts at setting you at ease. However, once they've got your info, it's game over. It's done. And they can steal even more than ever before. This is where it gets even worse, though. Not only have they fooled you into handing over your sensitive data, but now they've also likely covered their tracks by charging the stolen card through their fake merchant. It's like getting robbed twice. First through the fake transaction, then through all of your compromised account information. They may even send you a refund notice. It's fake, of course. We all know that. But behind the scenes, they are working to drain your account, to rack up those charges, to commit whatever frauds that they've got going on. Look, this all works through exploiting a couple of these different things that we have within us. We all see these things, and we act with this sense of emergency. We dive into this, and we don't look before we leap. They're also relying upon our trust, and it's been building for some time in customer service. When you see a suspicious charge, you're going to act quickly. You're going to assume that the merchant's legitimate. After all, the name has the contact info, so what could go wrong? But we also are seeing this in the form of very good, quote-unquote, customer service agents. Oh, we're so sorry. I can't believe we did this. This is a mistake on our side, and we're ready to make good on this. We're going to fix this all up for you. I want you to think about how we're conditioned to resolve these disputes. We see the charge, we call the number, we expect to talk to someone who can fix it. And they manipulate that trust, and they provide somebody who is more than eager to fix it and take our information and run. This is Benjamin Rockwell. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio.
Let me tell you about The Radio Factory, an exciting new venue for talk radio. It's the internet, the wave of the present. My name is Benjamin Rockwell, and I'm the host of a syndicated radio program, Computer Talk Radio. So I know the internet is here and now. Many of the hosts at theradiofactory.com have their own podcasts or radio shows across the country. But many people like the comfort of listening to their own special radio show at a specific time and day, much like we watch live television. The internet, as you're probably aware, is a powerful tool that allows The Radio Factory to deliver unique programming with far more variety than the windbags who are simply about contriving up viewpoints to get you riled up. Additionally, you'll find that many of the programs are shorter, giving more information in less time. Stick with theradiofactory.com and see how it evolves to keep you entertained, interested, informed, and above all, intelligent. After all, the Radio Factory motto is building your intelligence one talk show at a time. Theradiofactory.com.
your mouse is dead and the computer is on life support, Benjamin Rockwell can help with that. Translating technobabble to English, your translation expert, Benjamin Rockwell, is here with Computer Talk Radio.
We are halfway through this week's Computer Talk Radio. The website, computertalkradio.com, computertalkradio.com. That's how you can reach out to us. Scroll down to where it says contact us today, and we will get back to you with questions, or rather answers to your questions. Maybe we will have questions for you. Sometimes I do have to drill down and ask you more questions about the problems that you're experiencing. The phone number, by the way, 888-NERD-888. That's 888-633-7388. We are radio's broadest to look at computers, technology, and how they impact all of our lives. And helping us make good on that every week is Steve Keske, who joins me now. He's been in the industry for, well, you retired having done all kinds of different things throughout the industry. And you've got, and you've been fascinated by computers and technology through your whole life.
Ever since I was a little kid.
Yeah. So same here. So what do you have for us this week?
Well, question.
Oh, okay.
Online video games. Now,
okay.
I said online.
Yeah.
Okay. When was the first one?
The first online video game. I'm going to say probably right around... Well, oh, okay, hold on. Are we talking online as in internet or World Wide Web or...
Online.
Online. Okay, so we're going to be talking... I recall a few different items on mainframes back in the early 80s. So technically they could have been connected to DARPANET, so therefore... maybe a number of those text-based games back then. How close am I?
Close.
Yes.
ARPANET.
Yeah.
1970.
1970. Okay. Yeah.
And that's when the first ones were online.
What was the first one you recall?
I don't remember. The first one I recall?
Yes.
First one I recall, Pong.
Pong. Okay. Well, that probably wasn't online though. That was no. So
I will tell you truthfully, I don't play a lot of online video games.
Sure. I remember going over to the college and hopping on the mainframe there.
Yep.
And there was an option for games, and just like in war games. you just typed in, you know, you typed in games. You didn't even have to log in, but there were
thermal nuclear.
Yeah. they had some, what we would call dungeon crawlers,
yeah.
text based dungeon crawlers,
yep.
At that point in time, various, eventually we would go on to things like, Zork and Bedlam, which were very popular when they were ported over. Or actually, both of those were in the PCs of the years in the 80s.
Oh yeah, and you know, to me, you know, I didn't grow up with that because I didn't have a smartphone until about a year ago.
Yeah.
and I really still don't. You know, being legally blind, I don't really get into playing games on my computer anymore.
Sure.
My reflexes are a little slow.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I remember playing, you know, Pong and a couple of those Starfighter type.
Sure.
Games. But online ones, I'm hear about them, I say, now why would I want to play that?
So a lot of the games these days do, they don't really serve the any of the blind community or any of the more sedate games that would easily be converted over into that. There's a lot of emphasis on graphics.
Yes.
There have been a few of them over the years, and I've reported on them here at Computer Talk Radio. There's been a number of them. There was one that was it was a first person shooter developed for blind people.
Whoa.
So you're combining the idea of a lot of shooting of the firearms and bad guys, but you can't see anything. You might as well not even worry about the monitor. However, here's the thing that you have to have for that. You have to have a lot of control over your mouse, and you also have to have really good stereo headphones for that kind of focus in. Okay, the sound is coming from, it's over off to the left. It's to the right.
Right.
And then you spin the mouse in it left or right, and then shoot in that direction.
Yeah.
It is a very interesting thing. I saw a couple of YouTube videos when some of those came out. I think there was about three of them in that particular realm. When you consider there's probably 30 new games released every day.
Yeah.
It gets a little hard to find some of these things.
Oh, yeah. One of the things that I did enjoy.
Yeah.
Watching, and it never got to play. It was a game of chess.
Sure.
But
sure.
Chess pieces got up and walked around.
Yes.
One on Star Wars.
Oh, I remember War Chess? Is that something, what it was?
Something like that.
Yeah. Battle Chess. Battle Chess was what it was. I remember those, and I remember playing that. Now, that came out, the first version of that, probably from memory, sometime 88, 89, 90,
yeah,
somewhere in there. I remember the computer that I played it on, and that was quite a spin on chess. And at that point in time, I could beat the computer a bit. Since then, chess games, we've got, computers playing, these grandmasters and all of that, and the grandmasters are losing regularly, but those are specialty supercomputers doing that.
And I realized that when I play chess, I, don't really play a really good game.
Yeah.
It was just one of those games that you get into because you just enjoy watching what you're doing.
Yes.
More than winning the game.
Yes. Well, there were a lot of different interactions, different variations of the game over the years. And I haven't heard about it in a long time. I don't imagine it's around anymore.
No.
But I remember that they did a lot of different moves. Originally, it was just one set of animated moves to tackle the other opponent.
Yeah.
And then they upgraded it and upgraded it. And I remember seeing one where each time it was a different kind of approach to it. And I couldn't figure out how many animations they had, but it was a number of them.
Yeah.
Which doesn't take, in reality, it doesn't take a whole lot to do that. You just load in 10, 15, 20 different animations on both pieces, the losing side and the winning side, and then you just apply those randomly.
Oh, yeah. The video games in themselves.
Yeah.
Because a lot of them went from the video game type stuff in video game stores, and then some of them went to actually go online and all of that. But I personally like the real old games.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I will. I look across some of the different games from the arcades and And how they eventually wound up, wherever they wound up. Some of them were ported over into the PC realm. Some of them, some of them could not be ported over for whatever reason, a lack of interest. Or in my case, my favorite pinball game. My favorite pinball game, actually, it shows up every once in a while in a TV show or a movie because it was one of the most famous of pinball games ever.
Sure.
It's Black Knight 2000.
Oh,
oh yes. I loved that one. As for now, this is Benjamin Rockwell. That's Steve Keske. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment. You have a couple of those new carbon open frame racks from CyberPower, right?
Yeah, I love them. I configured a 25U to 40 inches deep, about twice as deep as a regular rack, and put more than a dozen peripherals in it.
You know, I saw your article about it. I can't believe it's not clutter.
And my 45U carbon rack, that's also 40 inches deep, will hold a ton of networking and control systems, the network video recorder.
Holy screwdriver, Rackman!
You're getting one of their gorgeous enclosed racks soon.
Oh yeah, the 24U. Bigger than their wall-mount carbon racks, but smaller than their tall boy.
Did you see what's happening with carbon on the CyberPower website?
Oh yeah, the promo, 10% off all their racks and rack accessories through the end of September. I put a link up at computertalkradio.com. ComputerTalkRadio.com. I want to take you on a journey here on Computer Talk Radio through internet speeds and determining how much internet speed you really need. And I'm going to start off, I'm going to take you back to my initial days just connecting to other computers. So this is before the internet arrived as we know it, before the World Wide Web started and all of that. So I started off running a bulletin board service at 1200 baud. This was the 1200 baud, to give you kind of a framework. We deal with numbers in the megabit range. And then before that, we dealt with numbers in the kilobit range. 1200 baud is 1 kilobit. It is nothing. It by today's standards, you could sit there and watch the letters coming across individually as they filled the screen. It was just text. It wasn't like the web pages that we have now. It was very, very paced, very slow, very patience inducing, if you will. But I then eventually moved to 2400 baud, 2.4 kilobits, and then 19.2, which was the US Robotics modem that was really big at the time, and it was amazing to have that, and it was expensive by even by today's standards. When we start thinking about how much we pay for all of the hardware, all of the computers in our houses, in our homes across the country, that was an expensive modem at somewhere, from memory, I think it was about $500, $600. And that was great stuff back then. And then we moved forward and we moved into additional speeds, 56 kilobit. Oh, that was amazing stuff. Most of the places we would connect up to did not have 56K when I got that modem. Today, it's a lot faster, of course. So I'm going to take you quickly through some of the different numbers through the years. 10 megabit in the late 90s was what I was running, and that was also amazing. Every time I got these speed upgrades, I was amazed at how much was being given to us, and I marveled for a long time and then filled that space and then got a bigger amount of speed moving from 20 to 50, and I don't know, it was 8 to 10 years ago, I got 100 megabit, and then 200 megabit speeds. And then, 5 years ago, I moved across the country. I'm in the middle of the country now. I was in Southern California, but I was really amazed when I could get fiber. And fiber gave me a few different options. I could get 200 to 300 megabit, but it was capped. If I moved up a little bit more, that was great. But they did note something in the requirements. I had a cap, and that cap said if I downloaded more than X, then they would start charging me for the amount of data that I was moving. So for a few bucks more, I got gigabit fiber, and they gave me unlimited transfers, so there was no cap on that. Great stuff. And a lot of people don't have to worry about the caps. That was an oddity that popped up every once in a while throughout my experience across these many years. I'm going to now address more of what speeds do we really need in life. And today, I still have fiber. I still have gig up, gig down. My speeds internal, because I am on Wi-Fi, it's about 300 megabit per device. Just that's how our Wi-Fi is set up in the house. We've got a little bit of distance, so we do take a little bit of a hit. Not a big deal. So I want you to start thinking about how much do you actually need. And let's piece this apart. This is really easy. We can start doing some of these numbers. Are you streaming 4K TV on any of your screens? Just 4K downloads. Most of us are not doing 4K downloads from Amazon Prime or Netflix or anything like that. Usually we're sitting there at a 2K speed. But if you are doing 4K downloads, and we'll start off by calling that, we'll assign that 25 megabit. Let's say you've got two screens that are doing 4K downloads. That's 50 overall. Next up, any of those 2K screens, any of those 2K downloads, if you're streaming, again, the YouTube and Netflix and Amazon Prime, we'll call that 10 meg for each of those different streams. So is anyone in the house gaming? You can add in. I'm going to tell you, this is all simultaneously. This is all of the different things that might run simultaneously, not individually. So if we've got at the same time two people are watching 4K screens and we've got a couple more that are watching 2K screens, you've got a big family and you've got a couple more that are playing video games, they're playing in-house gaming, you throw on another 10 apiece for that. So we'll call that 50, 60, 70, 10 meg for each of the games, 80, 90. Okay, that's 90 meg. That's a lot of just bandwidth that you're chewing up. Okay, your email, your basic web browsing, all of your non-video items take up far less space. So we're going to just add another meg per device on the network. Let's say you've got 10 different devices all working there that are internet active. I'm not talking about your smart home. I'm not talking about any of those different things thrown in there. I'm just talking overall. Okay, this is all at the same time. 100 megabit is actually really sufficient for most of your needs. 100 megabit is going to really do you very well. Now, yes, we do have the opportunity for those faster speeds. We do have the fiber. And yes, you're going to be able to boost through a lot of different things. Your downloads are going to be faster. Your Microsoft patches, anything that you're dealing with, your web browsing is going to be faster. But do you need it? And the answer is, well, no, not really. There are a couple of things you do get along with that. With a higher speed, if you get some interference, some temporary interference, great. That is going to help make up for it. You do have, usually with fiber and with any of these higher speed connections, you're going to have a better latency. What is the latency? The latency is the time for the information to come from your computer, go out to the server that's way out wherever it is, and then come back. That's just the round trip signal. And usually with fiber connections and any of your higher end speeds, so your higher end cable, they're going to actually be putting in better hardware for that. So that round trip actually goes very quick. And we want that whenever we're dealing with gaming, but we're also whenever we're dealing with downloads, we're dealing with uploads. Anytime you're moving information back and forth, that speed between those two locations, your home and that server, whatever server is serving up the data. So we're talking about the downloads, the videos, the whatever. That's actually really key. Look, you know, I'm going to tell you, most of us are doing just fine. We no longer have that need to clamor for the latest and greatest speed that's out there. But I want you to think about, what are the other options out there? These days, yeah, go for, if you've got fiber, definitely go for it. If you've got high-speed internet available to you, talking the 200, 400, somewhere in that range, 500 megabit, go for it. But it's no longer as amazing as it used to be. This is Benjamin Rockwell. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment.
Micro Center, home to all kinds of electronics and computer items, has over 20 locations across the country, and it's also available at microcenter.com. This is Benjamin Rockwell of Computer Talk Radio, and I live just a couple of miles away from my local Micro Center, and I've been shopping there for years. From Apple to Windows, they've got what you need. CPUs, got them. Screwdrivers and other tools, yep. Cables, televisions, scanners, projectors, cameras, they have it all. Micro Center is a place which fills your electronic needs. What are you looking for? Media centers, monitors, mice, MP3 players, media, modems, motherboards, memory? Those are just the M's. They aren't regional, but spread across our great land from Virginia to California. Each one is service and repair, in-store clinics, and business services, too. MicroCenter.com is their online store, a place where you can get your regular online ordering needs met. From the hobbyist to the professional, the brand name, or building it yourself, MicroCenter is your resource. Check out MicroCenter.com today. MicroCenter.com.
Christine's question. My husband wants to drive ahead with a smart home. He tells me it's going to save electricity. In your experience, how does that really play out? Christine reached out to me at computertalkradio.com. You can do it too. Scroll down where it says contact us today, and I will get back with you in regards to answers to your technology questions, your computer concerns, whatever they may be. And in Christine's case, let's start off by describing what I've done for my own home. And that is, I've replaced somewhere in the neighborhood of about 50 light switches. Yes, that's a lot. And yes, that's a lot of money. I've replaced out all of the light bulbs are now LED, with exception of about two or three, due to just a bizarre situation with something called the neutral wire. And it gets into really nerdy hobbyist. As you dive in, you'll find that some of the outlets in some homes may not have a neutral wire, and you just have to get a special switch. But with that, you have to have the old-fashioned incandescent light bulbs, or at least a couple of the LED light bulbs. Otherwise, it won't be able to power the switch. It's a special switch, and it's tough to deal with sometimes. So I had to do a bit of that. Along through there, I've got 20, 30 smart light bulbs in addition to that. So we're talking about light bulbs that I can change colors on. And then sometimes you'll do dimmer switches and things like that. In the grand scheme of things, I do figure that I am going to save some electricity. I'm not going to forget about light bulbs being on. I'm not going to forget about fans being on or anything like that. And I've got it all divvied up into zones. When I go to bed each night, I tell it to turn off big, huge swaths of lights throughout the house. You think about it as, you know, if you've got three stories, you can tell it to turn off upstairs. You can tell it to turn off the main floor. You can tell it to turn off downstairs. However it works out in your home. If you've got a ranch style house, you might say turn off the kitchen, turn off the dining room. You may group that all into dinner zone or whatever it is that you assign to it. It doesn't really matter how you approach this. It's more of giving you control over all of the different lights in the house. Now, you can go forward and you can set up a lot of automations. One of the automations that I have done is in certain rooms. Let's talk about the bathroom exhaust fans. And we frequently will have those on a separate switch. Well, what have I done in my home? I have set it up so that each of those turns off after 1 hour. And that's just how I've configured it. And you can turn off all of the lights in the house at a given point in time. I turn off all of the lights in the house at 9 o'clock in the morning, mostly because we've got enough light within the house. We've got all of these windows that are letting in light. So there's no reason to leave all of these lights on. And if we happen to be in the dark in one of the few particular rooms, we can just call out, hey, turn on the light again. And that actually, I feel like it helps a little bit, but only in the sense that we're chipping away with these things. We're turning off individual lights or groups of lights and saving a few pennies here and there. Where we get into additional range is that, yes, many smart home devices are designed with energy efficiency in mind. And that means that you can monitor the usage of some of these switches. You can factor in a lot of these different things. And yes, you will save money. Is that the big driving factor in all of this? No. I think for me, it's controlling everything and having it automated and setting up a lot of the more festive things. For instance, in the recent holiday season, we did set up colors to go on outside. And this is just with our regular bulbs. We can separate that from, let's say, outside Christmas lights and the Christmas trees. And we can set those up to be automated whenever we want. There is a certain level of, how can I say this, laziness factor. The ability to call out and say, is the garage door closed? And the system goes, yes or no. And you can actually close the garage door if you feel secure in that. You can do a number of these different things along the way. However, it's the energy savings is not a big driving factor. If you're using that as the only thing, no offense to Christine's husband, it is not going to pay for itself anytime soon. As a matter of fact, I don't know what the payoff in that is. For me, it is convenience. For me, it is being able to set up automation so that it looks like we're home and we're not. It helps me to set up automation of the outside lights so that they go on when we hit sundown and turn it off in the middle of the night or at least dim them. We can also set it to completely turn off when we hit sunrise. So there's a lot of different factors throughout all of this. I will say, yes, you can go through and you can use various energy monitoring switches or various smart plugs, and they will give you insights into the power usage of those devices, allow you to set up energy saving rules, and you can automate so much. But is it going to save enough electricity to pay for it? No, but there's a cool factor. There is so much so much there as far as the rest of what gets restored to you. My wife was not sold on the idea, and at times she's a little resistant. She'll say, yeah, sometimes, you know, sometimes it just doesn't respond well to the pacing, the various smart, or rather automation units like Alexa, they are not always good at recognizing your name. You're not always good at remembering, hey, what's the name of that light over there versus this light over here, and things like that. But overall, she has grown to embrace it and some of the convenience that comes along with it. Your mileage will vary. So talk it over with him, sit down with him and discuss it in deeper detail and take part in the process with him. As for now, this is Benjamin Rockwell. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment.
Hey guys, this is Benny Rockwell. Most of us use video cameras nowadays, but what about those old movie films in the back of your closet? Well, let me tell you about Legacy Digital Productions. They specialize in taking your old memories on film, videotape, and slides and digitizing them to DVDs. Imagine Grandpa's old 8mm and 16mm films that are just sitting in a box getting old and fading away. Legacy Digital will clean and recondition those films, capture them digitally frame by frame, and then produce beautiful DVDs of your precious memories on long-lasting archive-quality discs. They don't use a projector, and your films can't be damaged in the process, the best available for families like yours. The final results are gorgeous. What better way to preserve those precious memories for future generations? Call right now, mention my name, Benny Rockwell, and receive a 30% discount on your order. Call toll-free 1-866-2-LEGACY. That's 1-866-2-LEGACY, 1-866-253-4229. And tell them Benny sent you. Your memories are priceless, so call 866-2-LEGACY now.
This is Benjamin Rockwell, and now it's time to get down to business. This is where we talk about computers, the workplace, and a lot of the different things that are going on in the work world. Mandy reached out to me, and Mandy had an issue. She took a position for a company that's a startup, and they talked a lot about stock, and they talked a lot about that there were a startup, and therefore she needed to take lower compensation for that. But it, as part of the team, she would get these RSUs, which is basically it's restricted stock units. And she was wondering if she made a bad decision. And I will tell you that for the most part, the idea of taking a lower compensation and taking the form of additional compensation in the form of various stock options, restricted stock units, that can be an issue that you're going to have to sort through on yourself. Can you pay your bills? Is this a company that you feel has a good level of a chance of success? Over the course of my career, I have looked at a couple of different startups. I've interviewed with a few of them, and I have gone through this exact math computation. Is it worth working for a company that is, they're trying to put together something that is new, unique, novel, and bring that to marketplace? Is that going to be a success for me? Because that's something we have to think about. We have to think about this all the way along through all of the different companies that we go forward and we apply to. We have to think about, where is this company right now? Where is this company going to be in 3 years, 5 years, 10 years? Am I in a place that is going to grow, is going to allow me to grow? Is this something that is going to be good for me? And I can't answer that question for you. I can only answer that for me. I'm going to tell you that there are a whole host of statistics in regards to startups. Even the ones that seemingly look good on the face of it. I mean, there are deeper topics that we have to talk about in regards to what does the leadership look like? What is the overall competition look like, even though you may have a different approach to it? So here's some scary statistics for you. 9 out of 10 startups fail. And this is across the board. This is all of your traditional businesses, like I don't know, like a pizza place or something like that, but also these high tech startups. And that is something that you have to think about along the way. 40%, only 40% of startups ever become profitable. Only 9% of them survive 10 years. So there's a lot there that you have to think about, that you have to weigh out. So do you want to take a hit in your compensation, your upfront, your dollars per hour, your dollars per year, in the hopes, in this gamble, which is what I think of it as, on all of the different things that are going on? A, the company itself, their concept, their idea, the leadership in the company, all of these things really start to mount up. One of the different situations I went into, this is 5 years ago, I looked at a company and I interviewed, and I had a very nice interview with a very exciting startup that was looking at an option that was actually proposed many, many years prior. Somebody had a great idea and said we might eventually wind up there. And this company was moving in that direction. But what they wanted to compensate me on a regular basis was very low. And they offered RSUs, these restricted stock units. And the restricted stock units, really all the way along, we started looking at what would they do for me? Well, the company would have to be successful. The company would have to be successful on their own without somebody coming along and somehow diluting my stock options, somehow taking over all of the different things, buying the patents and kicking me to the side. All of these different potential bad things in regards to my job, in regards to my portion of dealing with the company, in regards to all of these different things. And mind you, I was going to be a technical support type person, not one of the people that was owning the patents. And how was that going to play out? And that started to really mount up in my mind. And like, I'm going to take a hit on the upfront, maybe in the future gain quite a bit if the company truly became massively successful. And I did not gamble on that. I looked at it and I said, no, it sounds exciting, but so many of these other things in the world sound exciting. This get-rich-quick scheme kind of concept, except it wasn't going to be quick. It was going to be 5 years, 10 years down the line. That company actually is succeeding a little bit in that space. They've got something novel and they're going to chase ahead. But for right now, yeah, they're still a small company and they're still struggling to put together this concept. Mandy, if you're willing to take that risk, if you buy into what they're selling, then maybe that's okay. If not, if you can't be 100% behind all of that, maybe it isn't such a great idea. You have to weigh it out for yourself, though. This is Benjamin Rockwell. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment. Years ago, I found a web hosting company that fit my needs as a computer nerd, as a radio show host, and, well, a normal person. Recently, though, it became clear to me that it was time to upgrade. I had a choice between my old plan and the new one at 7 times the cost. It was that awkward point where I could choose between a sip of water or being dunked in a pool. I searched around, comparing the many options for someone like me. After looking for 3 weeks, there it was, SiteGround. In proper fashion, I tested their customer service, their knowledge, and their care, their willingness to do things the right way.
The site ground salesman made sure that I didn't overbuy and get a 50-gallon bucket when all I needed was a 1-gallon bucket. The folks at SiteGround know WordPress, Joomla, and more. SiteGround.com, S-I-T-E, ground.com, for your web hosting needs. SiteGround.
Greg reached out to me with a very valid question, and this particular question gets asked along the way a few times every year, and it is this. Is it worth it to replace a broken tablet screen? And this actually applies. It doesn't matter whether we're talking about a tablet or we're talking about a laptop. We're talking about anything where the screen is built in. And this is really rough, because if the screen is physically cracked or damaged, it is going to likely need to be replaced by a professional. This is hardware that is just, we can't really tackle a lot of the different things that can go wrong with it, especially the more it is all built into one unit. Yes, technically, people can replace them, but it really needs to be replaced by the professional. And then we get into the next issue, and that is how expensive it is. And that's what Greg is asking. Is it really worth it? The prices will vary depending on the manufacturer, the size of the screen, who's repairing it, and what different screen options there are, and what hardware they're going to put in there. Generally, for decent repairs, you're going to look at about one-third the cost of the latest model. That's not a perfect number. Sometimes it's going to be a little bit less. Sometimes it's going to be a little bit more. So we have to start weighing this out. This is one of the key components of any tablet. This is a major component on a laptop. This is going to really be an impacting item to the overall unit. And my biggest guideline there is don't put too much money into an older tablet or a laptop if you break the screen. If we're talking about something that's 5 years old, forget it. Don't even think about it. Just replace it. See if you can work into the arrangement so that you get all of your data back. And if you're on something like the iPad and you've got iCloud and it was fully backed up and updated and all of that, then you're going to have an easy time with the restoration. With some of the tablets that are out there, they've mimicked that same kind of process, and you can get to that data back. If you've got a screen which is just cracked, you can probably even back it up yourself with most of these. Same thing with a laptop. And with a laptop, sometimes you can take frequently, you can take the old hard drive out and put it into an external device that allows you to restore all of that data over to the laptop. But the focus here is on that tablet screen. I'm going to say if your model is 3 years old or greater, don't go with that screen replacement option. Go with replacing the whole unit. Get the updated and go with that. If it's 2 years old, if it's 1 year old, you may think about it, but make sure you choose a reputable repair company. As for now, this is Benjamin Rockwell. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. We'll catch you next week.
Let me tell you about The Radio Factory, an exciting new venue for talk radio. It's the internet, the wave of the present. My name is Benjamin Rockwell, and I'm the host of a syndicated radio program, Computer Talk Radio, so I know the internet is here and now. Many of the hosts at theradiofactory.com have their own podcasts or radio shows across the country, but many people like the comfort of listening to their own special radio show at a specific time and day, much like we watch live television. The internet, as you're probably aware, is a powerful tool that allows The Radio Factory to deliver unique programming with far more variety than the windbags who are simply about contriving up viewpoints to get you riled up. Additionally, you'll find that many of the programs are shorter, giving more information in less time. Stick with theradiofactory.com and see how it evolves to keep you entertained, interested, informed, and above all, intelligent. After all, the Radio Factory motto is building your intelligence one talk show at a time. Theradiofactory.com.